First, it's time for Food Friday, and if you're looking to take your cooking to a new level, here's a suggestion for you: sauce. Whether it's a simple tomato sauce or a creamy white sauce, there's a topping for just about every occasion, and it can bring a whole new dimension to classic dishes. Our next guest has written the definitive guide to sauce and has some advice on how you can make both classic and modern sauces in the comfort of your own kitchen, and what you can pair these sauces with. James Peterson is a chef and a James Beard Award-winning food writer. He's written more than 15 books, including Sauces, Classical and Contemporary Sauce Making, now in its fourth edition. He joins us now. James, thanks a lot for joining us on Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you write in the book that sauce making can allow the cook more freedom to work with flavors, textures, and color than any other area of cooking. Tell us more about that.
Well, if you think about it, when you're baking something, if you bake a loaf of bread, for example, you mix everything in, you stick it in the oven, you hope it works. If it doesn't work, there's not much you can do until you make another loaf. Whereas with the sauce, you can manipulate it as it's going in real time. So if you've deglazed the pan, and you've added a little cream or whatever, and you want to wake it up with a drop of vinegar, or you decide you're going to add some freshly minced chives, or whatever, they're very amenable to improvisation and adjustments such that they go with whatever you want them to go with.
And you start off with kind of a brief history of sauces, especially in the French tradition, going all the way back, though, to the ancient Greeks. We humans have been working with sauces and building on them for millennia, actually.
Yes, that's true. And the Romans used to use, it's funny, I've read a lot about Roman cooking, but the thing that seems almost universal was their use of fish sauce, which they called garum, or sometimes in Latin was liquidum. And they use this on everything. And it sounds, as best as I can reconstruct it, the way I read about how it was made and such, is it would be like Thai fish sauce and putting it on everything.
Huh. And well, I was going to say, I can be intimidated by, wanting to cook a sauce, especially kind of in that French classic tradition. And I came into your book feeling a little intimidated, too. But I got to say, there is some fancier stuff, but there's some stuff that I look at it and think, as a home cook, yeah, I could pull these off. It's not necessarily super complicated, too complicated for the average home chef, is it?
Not necessarily. And the point is, of course, the book is so big and heavy, it's intimidating.
It's
anyway.
Huge.
Looks kind of like a textbook. It's scary. But inside, what's really important is not so much the recipes or whether they're complicated or simple. The recipes are really there to illustrate the concepts. And what I tried to do in the book, more than just say, okay, mix a little of this, a little of that, make your sauce, I tried to say how you cook. Because to make a good sauce, you have to know how to cook. You can't just cook something and wreck it, make a little sauce and put it on. And you can. But it's important to know how to braise and roast and poach and all those things.
What are some basic pieces of equipment that, somebody might not have in their home kitchen, but that would really make it a lot easier to tackle a lot of these recipes?
Well, it's not so much that you need a special equipment. The thing that must remember is to get something heavy. That you don't want something thin, because it's very hard to control that. If you say you're reducing something in a thin pan, what happens is the heat all concentrates where the flame is. Whereas if you have a heavy bottom object, especially for copper, the heat is distributed smoothly and is even. It doesn't burn in spots.
And talk about ingredients. You say you like this turn toward people going more and more to as fresh an ingredient list as possible. How much difference does that make in something like sauce?
Well, the funny thing about all this local stuff is that until very recently, that's how everybody cooked. That's out of necessity. It was all local. And in fact, it was in the 17th century, around that period in France, where they stopped cooking with spices and exotic ingredients from the Far East or the Mid East, and started cooking more locally with mushrooms and herbs. And that's where French cooking started to get its own identity.
And a big part of the philosophy you're working with, coming from that tradition, is, as you say, not contrasting necessarily with an exotic spice, but really taking your ingredient and magnifying, enhancing its own inherent flavor. How big a part of your sauce making is that?
Well, you nailed it on the head, because most, it's interesting because I think what identifies a French sauce versus what, not universally, but often what defines a French sauce, it does exactly what you just said. It underlines it. A good sauce should taste more like the thing than the thing itself. I make a lobster sauce that tastes more like lobster than anything you could chew on. So that's the goal, is to underline it. Nowadays, however, most people, and there's the other approach, which is to put things on the plate to contrast and accent what it is you're cooking. And I find that more common now. That's the trend now. If you go to one of these new restaurants and complicated food, and there'll be little condiments on the plate or little smears of things. It's rare to see a nice sauce, enough sauce that you can actually eat it.
We're talking to James Peterson about a new edition of his book, Sauces, Classical and Contemporary Sauce Making. Well, let's get into, again, maybe that person like me, James, who isn't a home saucier. What is a good, easy project for them to start with maybe this weekend?
Well, one thing I really love, what I really love is fresh mayo, homemade mayo. Because it's so versatile, you can add anything to it, and you can make, like, say you have some cold meats left over from the night before. You can make a basic mayo and then flavor it in so many ways, break it up into sections, divide it up, and flavor, like, with roast grilled peppers, with mushrooms, with herbs, with truffles, with saffron, with any number of things to make separate sauces out of the mayonnaise. Now, the thing about mayonnaise is it intimidates, because you have this initial period where you have to work the oil into the egg yolk, and that's the tricky thing. If you add too fast, or you're in a bad mood or whatever, it's very, very tricky. It won't emulsify, and you'll end up frustrated. So one of my tips is to take a couple tablespoons of bottled mayo, thin it with a little lemon juice, add an egg yolk for color more than anything, and whisk your oil into that, or stir your oil into that if it's olive oil. And that will, because you already have the emulsion set up by the commercial mayonnaise, you just stir it in. There's no big, complicated, hard, scary part at the beginning.
Well, I want to get into a recipe you shared with us for sauce, pardon my French here, bechamel. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, bechamel. Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the sauces. We've got this up on the Ideas Network Facebook page. What is that? What goes into it?
Well, nowadays a bechamel is basically a roux to which you add milk, white roux, which is lightly cooked butter and flour. Cook that for a couple of minutes until it smells good. Whisk in milk. Cook it till it comes to the simmer and boils. That's the flour won't really thicken until it boils. And then you flavor it, use a little cayenne and a little nutmeg. But my approach is somewhat different. When I take vegetables like onions and carrots and maybe some fresh thyme and sweat that in a heavy bottom pot, and then add the flour to that, then add the milk. That will give you much more complexity. It'll give you much more nuance in your bechamel. And they used to make bechamel like that, so it's not completely heretical. It's just something I do that enhances it.
Okay, I've got this bechamel in hand now. Bechamel, what do I do with it? What kind of dishes, meats, say, could I serve it with?
Well, nowadays, bechamel, in the 70s and 60s, France, of course, went through this period of Nouvelle Cuisine where they banished flour from the kitchen. And bechamel was one of the victims. You rarely see it now. Usually they use cream instead. But I like bechamel most for gratin, for taking vegetables, lightly cooked vegetables like cauliflower, broccoli, what else, green vegetables, and nap them with the cheese and put them in an oval gratin dish and a casserole. And cover them with the bechamel and sprinkle it with cheese, or add cheese to the bechamel, which turns it into a mornay sauce. But that's just nomenclature. It doesn't really matter. You add some cheese. And spread it over the gratin and bake it. Well, that whole bechamel kind of, it gets brown and flavorful. It changes, and it's really lovely that way. But I don't use it as a sauce per se on a piece of fish, for example.
It's Food Friday. We're talking about sauces with chef and food writer James Peterson. He's out with a new edition of his classic cookbook, Sauces, Classical and Contemporary Sauce Making. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What sauce or sauces do you like to make in your kitchen? Is there a certain dish that benefits from having a great sauce? Do you have questions about, well, general questions about sauce making or particular ones about matching a sauce with a dish, how to make a particular kind of sauce? And hey, you restaurant chefs out there, call in with your signature sauce and share the secret. Or you don't have to share the secret, but you can tell us about it. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Find a couple recipes there, by the way, for that sauce bechamel and a cauliflower gratin. You could eat that in California. Sure, why not? Couple of recipes there, and you could share your thoughts, too. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation on Food Friday with James Peterson. He's a chef and a James Beard Award-winning food writer. He's written a lot of books, including Sauces, Classical and Contemporary Sauce Making. That's now out in its fourth edition. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your advice or maybe your questions on making a sauce. Is there something that is a surefire hit for you? Maybe you serve it up over the holidays or other special occasions? Or do you have a question about how to pull something off, something you'd like to try at home, maybe something you had at a restaurant that you want to try to replicate? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post and find some recipes on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go right to your calls. Travis is online in Manitowish Waters. Travis, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Travis?
I had a question, not necessarily about sauce, but how to make French toast and waffles kind of more flavorful with a syrup or a butter or any kind of way to make them more delicious other than just maple syrup.
Travis, thanks. And you've got a whole section on dessert sauces and things like that. James, any advice for Travis?
Well, I'm such a fiend for maple syrup. It's hard to imagine anything better than that. The trick for me would be to get the best butter and the best syrup. But if you want a different sauce, if you're saying serving waffles as a dessert, I don't know if you do that, Travis, or if you serve them for breakfast, or how exactly you serve them. But you can make a butterscotch sauce. You can make a caramel sauce. Those are very good on waffles. Then the caramel, I describe both of those in the book. It's kind of fun to make the caramel because you cook the sugar in a pot until it turns red, melts and turns red, and then you add liquids to it depending on what you're making. So that's exciting. Fruits, of course, fruit coulis, which are basically purees that have been strained. Those are very nice because an acidic raspberry puree or coulis will be nice next to something sweet because the acidity and the relative lack of sugar balance something sweet is very nice. So those would be a few of my whipped cream, maybe. A few of my tips.
Travis, thanks a lot for that call. Gives an excuse to try lots of French toast and waffles to experiment with those. You can call in at 800-642-1234, by the way. And James, of course, we've got Thanksgiving coming up next week. A lot of people are thinking about the various dishes, including the gravy. Do you have some advice on making a great straight-up gravy or maybe a distinctive twist on it?
Do you know in the first edition of the book there was no gravy?
Oh, wow.
And my brother, it was Thanksgiving, he said, okay, I'm going to look up Jim's sauce book and find the gravy. It wasn't there. He was the one who alerted me to it. Now there is gravy. But the thing about gravy is that in order to make it well, you have to cook the turkey just right. You have to do all these, you have to build up to it. You can't just sort of in a vacuum make the gravy because it's based on turkey juices. Now, there's an inherent problem with this because if you cook the turkey the way I say to cook it, which is much less than most people say, you're not going to get any juices because when a bird or a roast is properly cooked, not overcooked, there are no juices, which is what do you do, you know? So what I do is I take turkey parts, like wings or backs or whatever, cheap, whatever is a cheap thing, and put them in the roasting pan underneath the turkey with a few a piece of onion chopped up, maybe a carrot in there. And that functions in a couple of ways. Those pieces will release juices, whereas the turkey won't, and that'll provide you the gravy base. It also functions as a way of holding the turkey up so it doesn't stick to the pan. Now, a lot of people use a rack to prevent that, which I don't recommend, because if you have a rack and the juices start to drip out, they land on the roasting pan and burn. Because the roasting pan is the temperature of the oven, whereas the juices are 200-some degrees Fahrenheit. So you start cooking the turkey that way, and then when the turkey's done, you cook that base a little more if you need to, and you deglaze it with a little broth. I don't want to make this sound complicated. It doesn't need to be. But what I do is deglaze a little broth, boil it down, caramelize it, do it again, do it again, do it again. And then deglaze it a final time, strain it, and that's the jus. And the jus is basically a gravy that hasn't been thickened yet. That's all it is. So when you see roast something, oh, jus, that's all it is. But for Thanksgiving, we like gravy. So I make a little roux with flour and butter, or sometimes a little of the duck fat that I've skimmed off somewhere, and cook that until it's caramelized. Then I add the broth or the juices and simmer that a little bit. And then the giblets, I love giblets in there, so I take the giblets and surround the bird with it during cooking, with them during cooking, so the liver, the heart, whatever you can find, an egg. And then I chop those, not too fine, but very, very fine, and stir that into the jus and season it, and it's a delicious thing. Now, people worry about lumps. I always do this lump thing. Just strain it. If you get lumpy gravy, stir it around as best you can and strain it. That's all. You know, it'll fix it.
I don't mind the lumps, actually. We're talking to James.
Like flour, lumps of flour.
Yeah, I can live with that. I'm not too fussy. We're talking to James Peterson. His new book, or new edition of his book, is out, Sauces, Classical and Contemporary Sauce Making. We heard from Chris on Facebook. Chris writes, I worked in a northern Italian restaurant. We had a blue cheese cream sauce with walnuts that was served over ravioli. Now, James, that sounds pretty good to me. I'd be worried about it being maybe too rich, blue cheese and cream together. How would you make that so it still maybe is a little light?
I would do that. However, whenever I see blue cheese, the word blue cheese, mm-hmm. I don't buy it. Because blue cheese, there is some awful blue cheese out there. Like, I won't name names because I don't want to get in trouble in some way, but you know, some blue cheeses are just vile, I find. So I like to be more specific. And in this case, I'd use Gorgonzola because it has a more distinct character. It has a distinct identity of its own. And I think it's fine to dissolve it in a little cream. Just don't use too much cheese and don't reduce it too much so it's gloppy or thick. Make it delicate. Don't make it too rich or thick. That make sense?
Yeah, I think good. So. Chris, thanks for that suggestion. And James, here's something I hear that I think I'm never going to make that. A red wine reduction sauce. I've had that in, you know, restaurants, fine. That seems like it's out of my league. How can a home chef make a good wine reduction sauce?
Well, the secret to this whole sauce thing, if you're really serious and you want to make sauces really as good as anywhere, you have to make a glace de viande. And glace de viande is basically broth that you cook way down so it's when it's hard, when it's cold, it's like hard rubber. That's how reduced it is. It's a weekend project. You buy, I don't know, 20, 30 pounds of bones from the butcher, order them, knuckle bones. Don't get marrow bones. Get knuckle bones. Roast them with vegetables, with mirepoix, with carrots and onions, a little bouquet garni, a little bundle of herbs, and simmer that. You simmer that about 12 hours, very gently, and you skim off the fat that rises to the top. I explain it in detail in the book. And then you strain it, and you reduce it down. You keep skimming and skimming and reduce it and change it to smaller pots, and you end up with maybe a cup or two of this stuff.
Wow.
However, when it's time to make your sauce, you just put a little of that in there, and you have instant super sauce. Like, so for your red wine reduction, you don't want to just reduce red wine, because that's going to be tannic and sour and not good at all. But if you reduce the red wine with a tablespoon or a teaspoon of the glaze, it'll cook down. And when it's cooked down, it's delicious. It's like a Bordelaise. And then I usually finish it with a little butter, swirling a little butter. It depends how much you make, obviously, but a small proportion. And another tip, which sounds kind of decadent, I guess, and extravagant, but I use French butter because it took me years to understand why my sauces weren't tasting like they taste in France. I was so frustrated, and then I realized it was the butter. So I use French butter for that, if I have it. Unless I don't.
And James, we just have a few moments left. You've got so many sauces to work with here. I assume you're experimenting all the time. What is one of your latest experiments just in our last 30 seconds?
Oh, you laugh. I'm making perfume now.
Perfume?
I have a perfume company, Brooklyn Perfume Company.
Do some of the same principles apply?
The thing that's interesting is the nose part. Because I grew up, in my 20s, tasting wine. And in those days, it wasn't so expensive. You could drink beautifully. You could taste beautiful wines. And I trained my nose that way. When I first started smelling, it just smelled like wine. It didn't smell like anything. And then you keep doing it, and you get nuance. And that was a bit of the training. So it translates well into the perfume thing.
Huh. We'll leave it there now. That's exciting news. James, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's James Peterson. He's a chef and a James Beard Award-winning food writer and a perfume designer, perfumier. His books include Sauces, Classical and Contemporary Sauce Making, now in its fourth edition. You can check out a couple of the many recipes from that book. We've got them shared over on the Ideas Network Facebook page, and let us know your favorite sauce while you're there.